You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and hope you're enjoying a wonderful holiday break. I'm Andrew McCullum. Welcome to another edition of the summer series of Tech Talk Radio. Glad you could join us. Well, summer's already well and truly underway here in the southern parts of Australia. We're all sweltering over, let's just say, warm weather, as you'd expect this time of year. So on today's show, I thought we'd revisit a couple of interviews that we had earlier on during the course of the year, which are still rather topical at this point in time. Now, we're going to kick off tonight's show in a reminiscence sort of way, where if you remember back in October, on our show on October the 10th, that was the show that we noted the passing of Steve Jobs. He'd been described as many things, but very much a revolutionary, as a lot of people would certainly testify. Brought us some great gadgets, and stylish gadgets too, you know, not those funny little square MP3 players. They were actually works of art. They were wonderful things to own. They were stylistic and fashionable. So we owe Steve Jobs a lot. He actually brought style into technology, something which I guess probably without him we would be carrying around fairly clunky and, brick-like, non-sexy type sort of gadget. So first up on tonight's Tech Talk Radio, or the summer series of Tech Talk Radio, we're going to revisit the tribute that we had for Steve Jobs the week that he passed away. Also tonight we're going to catch up with the Commonwealth Bank's David Lindberg. Now, we had a chat to him on the phone recently about the launch of Kaching, which is the Commonwealth Bank's new contactless payment app for the iPhone. So if you've heard a bit about it in the media, we'll replay our interview with David tonight and you can judge for yourself whether you want to get it for your iGadget. Also tonight, we'll revisit some of the better view from the couches. We'll stick a few of those in for you to have a bit of a listen to some of Adam's antics from 2011. So stick around for the summer series of Tech Talk Radio.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News.
Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life.
Technology visionary Steve Jobs loses his fight with cancer at age 56. Apple co-founder and chairman Mr. Steve Jobs died on Wednesday last week after a long fight with pancreatic cancer. In 2009, Mr. Jobs had a liver transplant and worked on as Apple's CEO until August this year when he handed the reins to Mr. Tim Cook. Mr. Cook wrote to Apple employees on Wednesday saying, "Apple has lost a visionary and creative genius and the world has lost an amazing human being," adding that Steve leaves behind a company that only he could have built, and his spirit will forever be the foundation of Apple. Industry movers and shakers were quick to praise Mr. Jobs, his legacy, and the contributions he made to computing and consumer electronics. Microsoft chairman Mr. Bill Gates said it had been an insanely great honour to have known Steve Jobs, and said the world rarely sees someone who has had the profound impact Steve has had, the effects of which will be felt for many generations to come. But his death was not unexpected. Steve Jobs appeared to have remarkable insight into the fragility of life and the importance of living every day to the fullest. Here, Mr. Jobs gives a commencement address at Stanford University on the 12th of June 2005, about a year after he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart.
Mr. Jobs was 56 years old and died peacefully surrounded by his family.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, it is the post-Jobs edition, isn't it?
It is.
Very, very sad. It was a bit inevitable. We all knew that it was coming. We with obviously the handover to Tim at the Cupertino headquarters a couple of weeks back, it was like, oh, here we go. Because Steve, being such a passionate man, he wouldn't have actually, I think, given over such control without seriously thinking about it. So
he was very, very sick for a long time. And I think it was like a few years ago, he was given a life expectancy of just a few months. So he sort of defied all odds. And
well, even that soundbite you played in the news this evening, you know, his mortality was obviously at the top of his mind.
It was,
which made him...
And that was 2005, that Stanford speech.
Yeah, yeah. And at that time, he was under the impression, or everyone was under the impression, that the nastiness had been removed from his body, but it's come back. So anyway, apparently Steve was laid to rest on Friday with a very personal family-only affair. There's no state thing happening. There's no tumultuous funeral service or anything like that.
Nice.
I think even the guys at Apple, I think, are doing something internally, very quietly, on the side type sort of thing. But a tribute to Apple too, or should I say congratulations to Apple. They removed all their product marketing on the front page of their website and just put a nice photo up there of Steve, which people could click through onto some nice words, which was on the next page.
Wired.com had a lovely tribute as well with a whole lot of celebrities. They had a nice picture of him. It was all black and white, very tasteful. And they had a whole bunch of celebrity quotes of saying, like Bill Gates had something written there, and I think they had Woz, and they had...
I haven't seen anything from Woz. What did Woz say? Do you remember?
I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was quite nice. It was just a little thing saying about how he was a visionary and a smart man. And it was just really, really nicely done. And Pixar had an image up as well with John Lasseter and Steve Jobs, I think, and someone else.
Pixar being one of the biggest things I think Steve did outside of Apple, in my opinion. His legacy there was the Toy Story movie, which I think was very much ahead of its time, like most of the products that he developed. You know, we wouldn't have our eye gadgets that we do today without someone like Steve at the helm. Everyone's got one. I think, Dr. Ron, you've even got an iPod device at home, haven't you?
An iPod Touch.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that doesn't have something
or hasn't used.
Yeah,
at least.
But most households have one of these iGadgets sitting there, whether it be an old iPod, or a phone, or anything.
Even people who haven't actually got an Apple product like an iPhone or an iPod, they've been affected by the changes that have been brought about in the industry by the way Jobs gets things done, by that relentless dedication to design, to producing not just devices that work, but devices that are designed well. And that's flowed on through the rest of the industry. Some people do it better than others, but you know, and it started not even with the handheld gadgets, but back with the iMac. Was the first personal computer that was designed to be something that looked good as well as something that did a good job.
And even if you don't like Apple products, you've benefited from the competition.
Absolutely, yeah.
From them always nibbling on the heels of your preferred brand has made your preferred brand better.
Oh, that's very true. So, we have a lot of good-natured rivalry in here about Apple people and PC people, but at the end of the day, you cannot dispute the fact that Steve Jobs was an absolute visionary. He completely revolutionised the consumer electronics and gadget and personal computer industry and landscape. There's no denying that at all.
At least at two points in its history, Apple computers would not have existed without him. He founded the company and left it, and then when he came back and basically rescued the company from something that was heading for disaster, heading for the end, and brought it back and put it and created something that's, turned the company around into something, much bigger than anybody could have expected.
And he was one of the forefathers. He was there when our tech as we know it was born.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Xerox and the Microsoft and the Apple, they were all,
Well, back then it was really only Hewlett-Packard that had sort of got their feet on the ground, and even then not by much, in Silicon Valley. And Steve actually, as a 13-year-old, got a job, a weekend job up at HP doing stuff. And he met Woz up there. Woz was 18 at the time. They both had one thing in common. They dropped out. Steve was more the marketing man. Woz was more the engineering, the man behind the devices. And, it sort of all went from there. Apple was born. The guys, like, there's some fantastic literature out there. There's some great biography type sort of stories, and even some people that have written about him as well, the stories that he got up to when he was a young kid. Woz was very much the serious prankster, and Steve was very much the professional. He always pushed things along a little bit. So,
and you can see the way that business mind has developed over the years. Because he's not just a tech geek. He has got that business mind that a lot of people who started out where he started out wouldn't have had.
Mm. Well, especially for a college dropout.
Yeah.
He's done very well.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you look at what Woz did for Apple, and that is every time he built a new machine, he wanted it to go twice as fast with half as much componentry in it, so to speak. And initially, Apple started off, I think it was a kit-type-based computer system, which you build up your own stuff and keep going. My very first computer was an Apple IIe.
Ah.
You remember
a lot of people's first computer was an Apple IIe. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't Ron's. I know he had a TRS-80, but mine was an Apple IIe, and I think it turned into a 2 Plus after that. But, you know, a tribute to Jobs, you know, like just getting the company to the level that it is today is no mean feat. In fact, I don't know anyone else who could actually possibly do what he's done amidst all the ferocious competition, the patent wars, the negativity against some of his pushes, which at the time, you know, you think, why did he do that? And then, you know, 6 months later, you go, oh, I know why he did that. You know, he was just very much, you know, removing optical drives from devices and things like that. No, we don't need those anymore. Things like that in the later part of his run at Apple, I think was really good. But, I think that the most amazing part of his story, or one of the most amazing parts of the story, was where he hired the marketing guy from Pepsi to come and run Apple with him.
That's right.
And his lines were along, I can't remember the guy from Pepsi's name. Mm. Caught me out on ABC Radio during the course of the week too, but I was telling this story there. Steve said to him, do you want to sell fizzy water or do you want to come and change the world with me?
Sugared water, I think. Yeah. Do you want to sell sugared water or do you want to change the world?
And obviously, as you would, you'd come along and change the world with someone. And then he...
Only if you believe they really can change the world. And Steve Jobs is one of the few who
absolutely
says that and can do it.
Yep. Anyway, as a result, he was fired because of the way the company was going. So Steve went off and built the next range of computers, as in the company called Next Computers or Next. Apple loved it so much, a few years later, they bought him out. As a result, he ended up being back on the board and, well, got his just revenge, really, didn't he? So I just think I don't know anyone else who could, you know, have any form of claim to fame like that. I think that's pretty amazing. Mm. What's your favourite gadget, Lena? You've got a few. Which one's your favourite?
My favourite Apple gadget?
Mm.
Probably my iPhone.
Really?
Yeah. But I'm tempted to say my iPod because that's where it all began for me.
Yeah.
But probably my iPhone, I think, would be my favourite. Just out of how much I use it and how much I wouldn't want to have any other phone. Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
I looked at the collection of Apple gadgets that we have at home, and there's a few, 3 to be precise.
Yeah.
And I must admit, my favourite's the iPad, without a shadow of a doubt. If I had to give them all up, the one and could keep one, I'd keep the iPad.
Mm.
I just think that was just such a revolutionary piece of equipment. It's the first true tablet computer system that we actually ever had.
Mm.
And to this day, nothing comes close to it. Well, some things are getting close to it, but nothing really comes to the... Yeah, you know, the prowess and the back end and the look and feel of it. Despite the flag.
We've had tablet computers for a long, long time. Going back in the recent history of computers, I used a Toshiba tablet computer a few years ago. But the thing that Apple brought to it was a completely different philosophy. To not have it running, you know, the idea that their tablet ran iOS, their iPhone operating system, and not macOS, which is their computer operating system. All previous tablets that we'd seen had run Windows or you know, the same operating system that you'd run on your PC.
Mm.
And this was a complete rethinking, a complete redesign of an idea that did exist before then. And that's typical of the way Apple Computers does things. Though, I mean, the PC existed before the Apple Mac did, but they made it something completely different and with a completely different design philosophy.
Mm. Steve had some great plans for Apple. He still does, or still did, and that is, you know, the new Appleplex, which he's looking to buy a whole suburb of Silicon Valley and around that particular area. And, now it all comes down to Tim Cook and the other people running Apple to make that sort of dream come true for the organ. I'm sure they will.
Well, it's one of the last things that Steve did, wasn't it? He was pitching.
I remember seeing the video at the Cupertino Council meeting where he was showing what they were going to do, wasn't it?
Yep.
So I'm sure that'll all kick in and all that sort of stuff. And I'm sure the company will certainly, you know, keep his philosophies close to their chest when they're doing all this stuff. So,
oh, he's shaped Apple into what it is, and I'm sure he will, yeah, definitely, he'll be steering it, you know, into the future.
What do you reckon? Do you reckon, do you think Tim's going to, like, would it be a foolish man to try and do what Steve did, or would it be more beneficial to actually have new blood and certainly take on Steve's philosophies and his business acumen?
Couldn't just have a Steve Jobs clone. That just, you know,
it wouldn't work, would it?
Is going to have that mix of qualities.
Tim will bring his own individual flair to it, but I think Steve Jobs chose him personally to succeed him, so he could have chosen anyone in the entire world. If Steve Jobs comes up to you and says, can you do this job for me? You go, okay.
Yep. I think you're the person to do it. I want you to take the reins.
Yep.
Did you see his keynote?
Must have been for
keynote?
A damn good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think?
It was good. Yeah. I thought it was good.
Really?
I thought it was respectful. And, yeah, good.
Really, the future lies with the Apple board to remember the history, to remember the things that they've learned from their history, to, you know, the things that went wrong when Apple was on the verge of failure, the things that went right as the new products and new philosophies were introduced, and to be mindful of their history and what got them to where they are, and to carry that forward without Jobs there.
They should be able to keep the company on course, shouldn't they?
Absolutely.
If they're good directors, yes. That's
well,
what
apparently,
they're for.
Steve sat down with Tim and planned the next 4 years already. So the next 4 years, everything's been already set into motion on what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, but you've got to look further.
We probably
further.
Won't see a real impact of Steve Jobs not being around for another few years now.
Mm. It's interesting. A lot of people saying that Steve Jobs' greatest strength was his failures.
Mm.
In what he didn't manage to pull, or what he learnt when things didn't quite go as according to plan as what they did.
And
so
he could just pull up his socks and get on with it when he did fail, you know. He wasn't too proud to go back to Apple. Some people would have been too proud once they got fired to go back again.
Well, yeah, mm. yeah.
Some people wouldn't have been able to do that, but he just sucked it up, pulled his socks up and said, yep, I'm coming back. Hi.
He did. He did.
Yeah.
And Apple's always had these products that have not worked, the Apple Lisa, which was just a little bit ahead of its time, and it was the forerunner of the Macintosh, which then was you know, a fantastic thing for the company. And, of course, the Apple Newton, which in
oh,
many
I remember
ways
those.
Could be seen as the forerunner to the iPhone.
That was a little tablet-y.
It was just a decade or two ahead of its time. Mm. That was, yeah. It was a great idea, but it was a decade or two too early.
But picking up on what Graeme said there as well, even as, you know, a short time ago was the whole antenna gate fiasco with Apple. They brought out the iPhone 4.
And didn't he take that very personally?
Well, he did. He took it personally, but he's also, like, he would have his head in the sand for a lot of things like that. And, like, Graeme was sort of getting to that, I think. You know, you're not holding it right. I mean, come on. If you've made a mistake technologically, then we're still going to respect you and the company and the product. Just fix it, address the problem, and get on with it, move on. But so, yeah, like Graeme's saying, you need the board needs to just take the good things. It knows what the good things are. It knows where the company's strengths are, or it should know. Hopefully it's learnt from past mistakes where there have been issues, and it can keep the company headed in the right direction.
Mm.
I've got confidence that they will.
56, very young. Very
That's
young.
Too young. That's Way far young. Too young. Especially, you know, I mean, for anybody, but for somebody that brilliant, it's really, it's devastating.
Mm. Yeah. I remember when I was over in California a year or so back, and Lid, who's our US correspondent, said, come on, I'll go around and show you Steve's place. And we jumped in the car in Palo Alto and took off around to Waverly Road where it is. And, yeah, it's a beautiful house. And it was like everything that Steve did. It stood out from the rest of the houses in the street because that was what Steve was. He was very unique. He had, you know, rather than having the manicured lawns and the beautiful gardening type sort of arrangements, there was no grass at his place. There was a beautiful garden out the back. But there were apple trees out the front and carrots and, you know, sustainable type sort of things.
Well, that's
in his
interesting,
front yard,
isn't it?
Which is just, yeah. Which was just, you know, it was what he was about, really, in a
so
lot of respects.
So two things stand out there, the dedication to design and being a bit ahead of his time.
Mm.
Because, you know, grass is, yeah.
And the Silver Merc was in the driveway, I think, at the time too, which was good.
Oh, there you go.
Not far from, it was a short drive from his place to the office. Wasn't too bad. Anyway, yes, just to remember. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to move on slightly to the 4S, which was announced during the week as well. It was a big week.
We might do that.
iPhone 4S.
It was. 4S. We might do that. We'll do some Coro. But before we do that, Steve left us with a few really interesting and pointed remarks. Here's a few of them.
I think one of the things that really separates us from the high primates is that we're tool builders. And I read a study that measured the efficiency of locomotion for various species on the planet. The condor used the least energy to move a kilometer. And humans came in with a rather unimpressive showing about a third of the way down the list. It was not too proud of a showing for the crown of creation. So that didn't look so good, but then somebody at Scientific American had the insight to test the efficiency of locomotion for a man on a bicycle. And a man on a bicycle, or a human on a bicycle, blew the condor away, completely off the top of the charts. And that's what a computer is to me. What a computer is to me is it's the most remarkable tool that we've ever come up with. And it's the equivalent of a bicycle for our minds.
It comes down to trying to expose yourself to the best things that humans have done, and then try to bring those things in to what you're doing. I mean, Picasso had a saying. He said, good artists copy, great artists steal. And we have, you know, always been shameless about stealing great ideas. And I think part of what made the Macintosh great was that the people working on it were musicians and poets and artists and zoologists and historians who also happened to be the best computer scientists in the world.
Apple is like a ship with a hole in the bottom, leaking water. And my job is to get the ship pointed in the right direction. I was lucky. I found what I love to do early in life. Woz and I started Apple in my parents' garage when I was 20. We worked hard, and in 10 years, Apple had grown from just the two of us in a garage into a $2 billion company with over 4,000 employees. We just released our finest creation, the Macintosh, a year earlier, and I'd just turned 30. And then I got fired. How can you get fired from a company you started? Well, as Apple grew, we hired someone who I thought was very talented to run the company with me. And for the first year or so, things went well. But then our visions of the future began to diverge, and eventually we had a falling out. When we did, our board of directors sided with him. And so at 30, I was out, and very publicly out. What had been the focus of my entire adult life was gone, and it was devastating. I really didn't know what to do for a few months. I felt that I had let the previous generation of entrepreneurs down, that I had dropped the baton as it was being passed to me. I met with David Packard and Bob Noyce and tried to apologize for screwing up so badly. I was a very public failure, and I even thought about running away from the valley. But something slowly began to dawn on me. I still loved what I did. The turn of events at Apple had not changed that one bit. I'd been rejected, but I was still in love. And so I decided to start over. I didn't see it then, but it turned out that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. The heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again, less sure about everything. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life. During the next 5 years, I started a company named Next, another company named Pixar, and fell in love with an amazing woman who would become my wife. Pixar went on to create the world's first computer animated feature film, Toy Story, and is now the most successful animation studio in the world. In a remarkable turn of events, Apple bought Next, and I returned to Apple, and the technology we developed at Next is at the heart of Apple's current renaissance. And Laureen and I have a wonderful family together. I'm pretty sure none of this would have happened if I hadn't been fired from Apple. It was awful tasting medicine, but I guess the patient needed it. Sometimes life's going to hit you in the head with a brick. Don't lose faith. I'm convinced that the only thing that kept me going was that I loved what I did. You've got to find what you love. And that is as true for work as it is for your lovers. Your work is going to fill a large part of your life. And the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking and don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you find it. And like any great relationship, it just gets better and better as the years roll on.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Do this calculation.
They called me on my mobile to ask me where the data was bad.
Or am I the last geek standing?
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Probably a little bit harsh.
I'm remembering conversations I didn't have.
Can I just say
that would be a benchmark?
It would.
Maybe there is truth to that.
No. Maybe.
Those same clueless people have now got iPhones.
Oh dear.
Now hang on.
Because no.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio. It's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And in other news this week, Dr. Ron Coro.
Correspondence this week.
Those who send us mail.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to send us mail, and we welcome it all. We read it all. And we get to most of it on air.
Sometimes we even respond to it.
Sometimes we respond.
Yeah.
What?
Sometimes we read it on the radio.
I know. Sounds unlikely, but
if you
it does
send
happen.
Too much mail, you can end up in our spam filter.
Carl, via the Tech Talk Radio feedback form, says, "Hi team, Hi, Carl. I'll keep this brief so I don't blow a fuse. What Channel 10 did with the AFL Grand Final was another lost opportunity to showcase HDTV. I agree, Carl. Yeah. And we all agree. We agreed with this last week. That's it. Instead of simulcasting the final on Channel 10 and 1HD, they showed amateur golf, followed by the Japanese MotoGP qualifying on their HD channel. That's right, qualifying, not the actual race, which was Sunday. The well-worn excuse of not enough HDTV penetration in the market might have carried some weight in the past, but it's simply nonsense now.
Costs them too much.
I don't think you could find a standard deaf-only TV in any store these days, and with HD set-top boxes now under $50, it's time commercial TV started taking high-definition seriously. 10, he says. Regards, Carl. I'm off for a bit of a lie down.
Not only commercial TV. The ABC needs to take it seriously as well.
And stop running little mobile phone recorded news clips on its HD channel.
Correct.
Not getting anything out of me. I agree with everybody. Yeah. Everything you've said.
Carl, no argument from any of the panellists here.
Carl, if it makes you any better, I provide content to Channel 10 and we provide it in HD and that's as far as it goes.
You're doing your bit.
I'm doing my bit. We're making it. We're making it HD.
We're doing all we can, Carl. We're giving her all she's got.
Yeah, exactly. We're making it in HD, but it just comes out the other end a little softer and furrier than what we give it to them.
Regular contributor GJMCN via the contact form says, I went into my security suite ZA Extreme.
What's that?
Ooh. I think ZA Zone Alarm.
Yeah.
Extreme.
You're not a fan?
No.
I'm not a fan either.
No.
Sorry, GJ. It said a new update needs to be installed. But wrong, the Australian reseller, SecureTech, is currently restructuring, in inverted commas, and so their website and phone support are all redirected to the US of... A, expletive deleted, I've got there.
So what happened? He rang him up and he spoke to some person on the other side of the planet who said, we're not here right now, call back later.
They said that his license wasn't recognised, but he could rebuy it if he wanted to.
Oh, that's handy. I'd be rebuying something else.
Now I'm waiting online chat to a new US of A call centre with no accent. So he wasn't very impressed with Zone Alarm. I've never really been impressed with Zone Alarm. It's a firewall-y type program.
I'm not impressed with any of those firewall type programs.
They all bang their own drum, don't they?
Yeah, and a lot of them. Yeah, they all. The idea, what Zone Alarm and a lot of these other firewalls do, and every single virus vendor has their, you can buy the antivirus or you can buy the security suite, which has all kinds of other things added on. And one of the things I always add on is some sort of firewall. But what this firewall does is it blocks outbound connections from your computer to the rest of the world, which the only time that's ever going to save you from a virus is if you've already got one. It won't stop a virus attacking your machine. It'll just prevent the virus from doing what it wants to do, or the malware, or whatever it might happen to be.
But at that stage, it's
but
too
that
late.
At that stage, it's already too late. It's a horse's bolted situation. Now, but the price you pay is that it breaks two-thirds of your other applications that need to talk to the internet.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times I've had customers, come to me saying, I've got this mystery, I can't get this to work at home, I can't get Skype to work, or I can't make a VPN connection to the office. I'd given them the instructions and they'd gone and set it up. And, you go and uninstall their horrible security suite and it works. It breaks too many legitimate things, doesn't really give you the protection that they say it does. It only protects you against something that's already happened.
Mm.
It's just a waste of money. Don't let the antivirus vendors upsell you to the security suite unless you really need it for some particular reason.
If you're running one of the more modern operating systems too these days, they're not bad what they've got built in. And
well, they've all got firewalls that protect you against inbound connections.
Mm-hmm.
But what Zone Alarm and the Kaspersky Security Suite and the Norton Security Suite and all those ones do is they add a firewall that blocks outbound connections as well.
So if someone lobs something on your machine and it arcs up without you knowing it, Zone Alarm, theoretically, or one of those things will come up.
Something is trying to send 400,000 emails and would you like to block it, please?
Yeah.
But by that time, you've already got the malware on your machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Far better to protect it the other way.
I must admit, I'm a big fan of Microsoft's suite at the moment. It's been really good. It's put it this way, I'm behind firewalls and server protection systems anyway. Mm-hmm. But just from an external point of view, it seems to be doing quite well. And I've thrown things at it, which I know are nasty, and it's picked it up straight away. So it's been very good.
Warlock in our chat room says, Zone Alarm equals POS. point of sale, I think that
what?
Means.
No. Point of sale?
Right.
No.
Primal says Zone Alarm is the Nokia of antivirus.
Oh, dear.
Which is the new go-to insult, I think, now. Definitely.
Come and join us in the chat room if you're listening live. That's at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Yeah,
which is Monday night at 8 o'clock on the internet thingy and on radio in Melbourne.
If that's when you happen to be listening. Mm. Otherwise, you can come to the forum, which is at forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
How's the logins going?
Andrew, you have to ask these awkward questions.
I do.
GJ, I hope that's...
It's read-only.
It is. It's read-only at the moment. No, you can log in if you're a member, but the registrations are turned off at the moment.
Send Dr. Ron an email if you want to join up.
Yeah, that'd be really helpful. Thanks.
He'll put a manual one in for you.
I'll spend all my...
his personal email address, which is...
that'd be great. I'll spend all my life reading emails and never get anything done. Now, GJ, I hope that answers your question. That's what everyone thinks of ZA Extreme. And last but not least...
What is POS?
Point of sale.
I'll tell you later.
Thanks.
Cisco on the Tech Talk Radio forum, speaking of forums, says, I'm usually the last one to take interest in a video game commercial.
Ooh.
But this one was exceptionally well done, in my opinion. He's put a link there to a YouTube clip. If you search in YouTube for Michael, PS3, Long Live Play.
Stands for Palm OS.
Tell us about it, Lena.
See, it says in the chat.
It's an ad that... It has it's for the PlayStation 3 and Sony, and they've got pretty much every major video game character out there at the moment, all in sort of this tavern type environment, and they're all cheersing to Michael, who, you know, we're all here, and it's all really rousing speeches and everything for Michael, and Michael's the guy with his PlayStation controller, and there's a big shrine on the roof about Michael. But it's just really well done in the ways that they look and sound exactly like their characters on
it's, it
the
is
games.
Well done. It's very entertaining. So have a look in the forum if you want to check out the link, or we'll pop a link in the show notes as well. But if you'd like to communicate with us, the address is feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Gee, where does the time go? We're up and running already. It's nearly halfway through.
We should do a 2.5 hour version.
No. Leave that alone. Well and truly alone. That'd be very good. Ah, dear. Anyway, yes, Dr. Ron, I rudely interrupted you earlier on in the piece. You mentioned the words iPhone 4S and all that sort of stuff.
I said, yeah, let's have
And you mentioned it in the news too.
Let's have a quick chat about that. It was a big week in tech. Sometimes we have slow news weeks, and this last week's been very busy.
It has indeed.
Good news and bad news. And now good that the 4S has been announced, and there was a lot of speculation about whether there would be an iPhone 5 announced at the Apple events, whether it would be a 4S or both or something. It was just the 4S. Received a very sort of ho-hum response from the industry.
Hum-ho.
Hum-ho. Mm. Bit of a lackluster sort of...
Hang on, let's do a litmus test. Lena, would you get one?
If my contract was running out soon, I would. But I've got another year, so no.
Okay, there we go. There's our litmus test.
But that doesn't mean I'm not impressed by the technology. I think Siri alone is probably a good reason to get one.
Siri, the voice recognition Siri?
I would use that.
Now, Dr. Ron, you said it was being trained to learn Australian.
Australian.
With a Y.
Australian.
What's going on? We've had this on... My lingo works really well on my Android. Is this any different?
Well, there's always the possibility that these types of products are developed in a particular market and they're tested and they work quite well for Americans or for English or for...
It's funny you should mention this.
Whoever.
Says he, pointing a finger in the air, which you can't see on the radio. Mm. But it's funny because sometimes when I get frustrated with my voice recognition stuff on my phone, if I pretend to be an American, it works really well.
Ah, see, there you go. We're still waiting for the Kinect, the Xbox Kinect, to recognise Australian accents. So.
Oh, do you have to speak American to it too, do you?
Yes. Yeah? Or British. Yeah. Just anything but Australian.
Or British.
Mm.
Oh, okay.
It's a very tricky thing to get speaker-independent voice recognition working properly. You can have speaker-dependent, which works 100% of the time. That's where you train a device to recognise your voice and your particular way of saying things.
Mm-hmm.
But speaker-independent is something altogether different.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to go through a lot of work to actually get it to be reliable with an Australian accent.
Mm.
I'm sure they will, knowing what Apple's like. They'll make a good fist of it, but we'll have to wait and see.
We should go through the list of ins and outs very shortly, but... I might point out that Adam has a view on this from the couch.
I thought he might.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to Adam's view.
So here's this week's View from the Couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
Regardless of your technological allegiances, we should all pay our respects at the loss of the visionary Steve Jobs. Part Henry Ford, part Walt Disney, part P.T. Barnum, Apple's Steve Jobs forever changed the way we see personal technology. It's a shame that Jobs didn't survive to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the iPod later this month, as it's the device that reshaped the personal technology space. Regardless of make or model, practically every consumer electronics device we have today has been in some way, shape or form influenced by the iPod and its descendants, all of which Jobs helped create. It's also a shame that Jobs didn't live to see the launch of the mythical iPhone 5, as I don't feel the incremental iPhone 4S truly does his vision justice. Religious metaphors have always dogged Jobs and the cult of Apple, and they'll continue to do so. Just like Moses, Jobs led his people out of the wilderness but died within sight of the promised land. It seems cruel that a visionary like Jobs didn't live to see his vision fulfilled, although his influence will surely be felt for years to come in Apple products. Unfortunately for Apple, the loss of Jobs comes as the Android hordes amass at the gates. Considering this, it's disappointing that the iPhone 4S is mostly playing catch-up rather than leading the way. There was a sense of deja vu last week for iPhone fans who woke to the news of an underwhelming incremental upgrade rather than a major redesign. Yep, it was the iPhone 3GS all over again. Faster processor and graphics, a sharper camera, and new voice commands that will be denied to owners of previous iPhones when they update to the new operating system. If you're generally satisfied with the iPhone 4, you're unlikely to ditch it for the 4S, especially if it would involve breaking a contract. iPhone 3GS owners who've held out for 2 years will obviously be keener to upgrade, although perhaps a little disappointed they're not getting the mythical iPhone 5. The biggest difference between the unveiling of the iPhone 3GS and the unveiling of the iPhone 4S is that this time Apple can't afford to be complacent. The launch of the 3GS 2 years ago was into a very different environment. It was before the rise of Android superphones such as the HTC Desire or the Samsung Galaxy S. It was even before the release of Android 2.0 Eclair. Back then, Apple's Jesus phone was in a class of its own, but not anymore. Today, Android is such a significant threat to Apple that Cupertino is relying on lawyers rather than designers to hold off the competition. Meanwhile, even the new Windows Phone 7 is going from strength to strength, with the recent Mango update addressing many of its shortcomings. Only the most delusional Apple fanboy would believe that the iPhone is still untouchable. Now is the time for Apple to forge ahead, to break new ground, not to merely play catch-up in the megahertz and megapixel wars. Now is perhaps the worst time to lose a visionary like Steve Jobs.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Our suspicions are being confirmed in the studio, ladies and gentlemen.
Lena would like to point out that fangirls can be delusional as well.
Exactly.
Dear. So
Fan person is the politically correct term.
A fan person?
You can have a politically correct term for a fanboy.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
All right, so the 4S is out.
I think he's on the money. They're reliant more on lawyers than innovators.
They are these days because I think we've spoken over the last couple of weeks of the patents that are being snapped up willy-nilly by all these companies so that they can, for no other reason than it would impede the development and the marketing of a competitor's product. So,
and they're on these. The patents are applied to these most incredibly generic sorts of things, like the action of moving your finger across a screen and stuff, and they want to have patent rights to that for the rest of eternity. It's not realistic.
No. Anyway, so what are the other things? We've got 8 megapixels now. Mm-hmm. Megapixels?
Lots of megapixels. 8 megapixels in the camera.
Yeah.
And high definition video. Is it 1080p?
Yeah,
video.
Progressive.
Now, I think the iPhone 4 was 720, is that right?
I don't know.
Right?
Lena, do you shoot video with your phone, Lena?
Yes, I do.
Or you just FaceTime it?
No, I shoot video. I rarely use FaceTime.
Yeah?
Rarely. I never have to chat with people in the same room as me. So that's why. But yes.
Okay, ourselves excluded, so
not
obviously.
Not the most useful of features then, is what you're saying?
Not for me personally, no. No, but I can see how it would be for some people.
Yeah, and obviously it's got the new processor in it, so things might happen a little faster.
Mm.
But I guess you got to look at, do you bite the bullet now? And I think, Lena, you're on the money by sitting tight for a bit and waiting for the new one. Even a 3GS user, I reckon, would sit tight. The only reason why, my motivation, and I'm speaking selfishly here, is if a phone died and I had to replace it with something, and go, oh well, yeah, it looks all right, I'll get it. Yeah. But I wouldn't be going out there and going, oh, get rid of my 3G or my 4, and buying one of the new ones yet. Yeah, but that's just me.
More importantly, would you get rid of an Android phone, HTC Desire HD or something, and replace it with an iPhone?
No. No.
Because they're the people they've got to convert across.
Well, I got the iPhone 3G, and then I got the iPhone 4. Yep. So it makes sense for me to just wait for the 5, I guess.
Yeah, it does. Sit tight.
I get the ones in the middle, so...
That's good.
You're happy with the processor speed in your iPhone 4?
I am.
Lena, it's pretty fast. You're happy with the reception in terms of the radio components in the phone?
I'm with Vodafone, so I'm never going to be happy with the reception. Happy.
Yeah, all right.
It's very funny. I asked Lena to do a test with me, MMS test, the other day, and... You were spot on the money. She said, yeah, I've sent it. She said, give it half an hour or so. It's Vodafone. And sure enough, it took half an hour, three quarters of an hour before it actually rocked up on the network
MMS
to where I was,
across
network.
I tell everyone to email photos, don't MMS me.
Yeah. Anyway, it proved a point, so thank you very much for that.
Right.
The iPhone 4 is available October 14 in Australia, which is, if you're listening to us live on Monday, that's a couple of days.
Yep.
If you're listening to us on the satellite, on the CBAA, then it was...
Yesterday.
You've heard it. It's out. If you're really keen to go and get it, so
I think the Siri is the impressive part.
No, not yesterday. Today, if you're listening on one of our other community stations. Yeah.
Now, the other thing too is there's been a lot of banter going on about pricing with the Apple iPhone. Well, you've got to bear in mind too that all the prices you've seen out of the US are on contract, and the ones you've seen here so far have been outright purchases.
Yeah, that does look like there's a lot of disparity there. Yeah. But as Andrew says, there's the pricing in the United States is on plans, and the ones that, the prices that are being advertised in Australia at the moment are outright prices, you're correct. So we start off, 16 gigabyte version here is about $799 Australian dollars?
$799 for 16, $899 for 32, and $999
for the 64 gigabyte version.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time we've had a 64 gig one as well. I think it was always 16 and 32.
I think you might be right.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right.
Which is impressive. That's a lot of gigs.
That's modern technology for you.
Yeah.
It's the way it's all going. So in Australia, Telstra and Optus have confirmed that they're going to carry the iPhone 4S. And, of course, Vodafone, they didn't reply to people's requests during the course of the week. But it'll front. It always does, because otherwise they'll be left out. And I don't know. Let's see what happens there. But, yeah. So the A5 chip, obviously that's a good selling point. One thing that was interesting, everyone's been talking up this contactless phone payment systems. You know, the... RFID, wipe it across gadget. Shall I wind Graham up now?
No. Okay. Don't go there. Graham, cover your ears
confused.
For 30 seconds.
Hey,
I will listen and I'll correct him when he goes wrong. Notice when, not if.
Yes.
Quite confident there.
Anyway, the lack of the rumoured near-field communications capacity or capabilities on the Apple's iPhone is obviously going to delay a lot of the banking people, because they're all really hanging out for this sort of stuff. They've been sort of saying, well, it's here. No, I know PayPal and all those sort of guys are keen to get on board with this sort of technology too. But Australian banks, mobile operators and analysts have speculated that the iPhone 5 will have the embedded near-field communications capacity. And that'll obviously spark a new range of gadgets and things like that that'll come out in banking and e-commerce and stuff like that. So, everyone's going to have to sit on the fence a little longer until either Apple comes out with one or a competitor.
And it's going to take the implementation of the near-field communication technology into a device like the iPhone for it to become mainstream, for that adoption to actually take place.
And you've also got to bear in mind that Apple have not said that it's going to have this technology in the iPhone 5.
No, it's all rumour-mongering.
Everyone's speculating about it and all that sort of stuff.
Those doing the speculating came pretty close, though, didn't they?
Yeah.
They said probably a dual-core A5 processor. They'll probably redo the antennas. It'll probably have a better camera, better video. So they're on the money with most of the improvements.
Yeah. So we won't be able to go to Safeways and get $35 out without signing for it. Well, look, he looked.
He was just testing, Graham. He was just testing.
Poking the angry bear with a stick. It's
pay
not recommended.
Pay no attention to the man on the other side of the panel. No, but we can't...
Pay no attention to the man on the other side of the panel there who's talking nonsense.
No, we're not going to be able to do that with our phones, just by waving our phone across. No. Mm. Which is a bit sad, but I'm sure it will come. Its time will come.
Samsung planned an iPhone 4S block. I read this in IT News. This was quite interesting. But Samsung has indicated its intention to file a preliminary injunction against the launch of the iPhone 4S in Italy and France, in hopes of derailing Apple's new product. And this is the patent tit-for-tat that we keep seeing going on around the place.
Yeah, because Samsung's just as responsible as Apple. What is it that they've got taking...
Oh, obviously, the technology that's being used in these devices, they obviously seem to think they have some form of patent over.
People are using their fingers to touch things, so that's infringing our patent.
Yeah.
People are holding things in their hand. That's a patent infringement.
Yeah, look.
Good.
Yes.
Inhaled just then, and I patented
that.
Yeah,
I know.
Sorry. And now I'm going to sue you.
There's only one patent, I think, worldwide that sticks technically, and that's the CSIRO's Wi-Fi patent. They did that back in the 1945 with the war. And, yes, they came clean some...
They developed it a couple of years
later, actually, wasn't it? Because everyone's using it, that Wi-Fi technology. So, anyway, so, yeah, Samsung are at it again, which will be interesting to see what happens. So, yeah. Anyone got anything else that's relevant for iPhone-y sort of stuff?
Yeah, the Siri. The Siri.
The Siri, we should talk about that.
That's very impressive technology.
Do tell.
Well... I thought it was from the video I saw.
She's lifted it up and now she's putting it down again.
Yeah. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. I thought that was really impressive with being able to order it to do things, but also to tell you, you can tell it to text message someone and what that text message will contain, but also how many meals in a cup, Siri? How many this and, it's just like your little buddy, your little personal assistant that you have with you at all times. And I think that's really cool.
Is it natural speech recognition? Can I say to it like, Siri, send a text message to Lena?
Yes.
I don't have to use specific words. I don't have to say, Siri, text, Lena, mobile,
now.
It
was very natural. It was very, I don't know, have you watched the video?
No, I haven't, to be honest, I haven't.
There's a guy at the start who's running, he's going for a jog, and he says, Siri, call my wife, tell her I'll be 10 minutes late, or something like that. And it'll text message my wife, tell her
I'll
be 10 minutes late.
Very, very difficult to do. I'll be impressed if it can do it.
Mm. Is it intelligent? Does it have predictive texting?
Well, does it say dear at the end and sugarcoat it for you so you don't get in trouble?
And does it change words on you to completely remove the context of which you wanted to say?
Yeah. And when you say I'm running 10 minutes late, does it know you're always running like you're always 10 minutes late anyway? It'll change it to 20 minutes.
Yeah, but like this website that we've got, Damn You Autocorrect, we're going to have Damn You Siri.
That'd be a good one to register quickly.
Damn you Siri.com.
Siri.com. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, no, I think it seemed really impressive. I liked it. I think if my contract was coming up to changing anytime soon...
Wouldn't sit tight?
No. If my contract was going to end soon.
But... Maybe just get your corner to crack and go and get a new one.
Yeah, ping!
Yeah. It just happened on my bedside table.
Accidentally dropped it.
That's it.
Now, this is something I didn't know. If this is true, Warlock in the chat room is saying, the search comes through Wolfram Alpha for natural language answers. Now, if you've played with Wolfram Alpha on the internets... That's a very impressive site where it does actually take natural language questions and queries and it works out what you want to know and gives you a meaningful answer.
There was one one of the characters in the ad says, what's the weather like in San Francisco? And she says, oh, balmy, blah, blah, blah degrees. And gives you, the it's going to rain here and there and some locations around it as well. It was really impressive. Mm. I know it was an ad, so it's... Never going to look
bad. There is
bad.
A 100% chance of weather in San Francisco in the next 24 hours.
That's right.
Correct,
that's right.
Siri.
Well done,
it.
Siri.
I think it'll be good.
Well, they'll be obviously listening for keywords and its accuracy. Well, the proof will be in the eating, won't it? The proof in the pudding. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I think it's good for accessibility as well, for maybe our vision impaired technology using friends.
Yeah, not just inquiries, but getting it to do things like, book me a taxi to leave home in 15 minutes, please. Yeah.
Come on. Do you really trust technology to do that for you?
Apple, yes.
Book me a taxi, you'll get something else roll up at your house. It won't be a taxi.
There's one thing Apple can do well, and it's slick things that work. So they wouldn't put this out if it wasn't...
Seeing's believing. It's just new in the marketplace.
Smooth
we'll check
slick
it out.
And worked.
Yeah.
Warlock's
we'll
going to get one this week.
I thought he was waiting for Christmas.
He's going to go out and get one on Friday.
Okay.
So
we'll have to get him on the show and you can tell us all about it, Warlock. Just don't be quite so passionate.
Try and stop me.
Now, I just want to go back a step.
Yep.
I've just been doing some research while Lena was raving about her voice thing.
Exactly.
The question was asked before about what patents is it that Samsung are upset about in relation to the iPhone 4S.
The send button?
And the two patents that appear to be in question, one is called Apparatus and Method for Stabilizing Terminal Power in a Communication System, whatever that might mean.
Sounds very impressive.
And the other one is a patent called Apparatus and Method for Selecting an Antenna in a Communication System, which sounds like what we used to call space diversity.
Oh, yeah.
Which has been a concept that's been around in communication systems for, well, forever. So some goose has taken a patent out on that, and Samsung have bought it, and they're trying to stop Apple using their fancy system. This is Apple's answer to the antenna problems on the iPhone 4. The iPhone 4S
You've got two in them now.
Has a similar system, but it's got two of them and automatically selects the one that's getting the best signal.
So it doesn't matter whether you're left-handed or right-handed now, it's going to work.
That's it.
Yeah.
So, but these are the patents that Samsung are upset about. And if Samsung have a patent on space diversity antennas, then that is just patently ridiculous.
Ha ha ha. I got it.
It is. You know, Graham's right. It's stupidity. It's like saying, oh, that device has got a power button and that's infringing my patent.
But I don't know how they let these patents get registered. Space diversity antennas.
Why do they let these patents become registered in the first place? Who is actually allowing them to do this?
The patent officers that aren't checking.
Well, they need to be taken out and shot at dawn.
They should. Yeah, you're right.
Tech Talk Radio does not encourage the use of violence.
It does against people who work in the patent office.
Yes, that's right.
Except for them.
We actively encourage them.
Well, you stop the incompetent people who work in the patent. You know, if you can find a competent patents officer, then, we'll defend him. But, all the rest,
You need to
line him up against the wall.
Podcast Graham, tip, compressor.
Hang him high.
Okay. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We might take a break after this and we'll let everyone cool down a bit and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
So how do I do this calculation?
They called me on my mobile to ask me where the data was bad.
Or am I the last geek standing?
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Probably a little bit harsh.
I'm remembering conversations I didn't have.
Can I just say...
That would be a benchmark.
It would.
Maybe there is truth to that.
No. Maybe.
Those same clueless people have now got iPhones.
Oh, dear.
Now, hang on.
Because no.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Tech Talk Radio, Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron. Adam is on the sidelines on this one, unfortunately, but that's the life of being a technological person. It's currently displaced from the studio a little bit. But anyway, we'll overcome these challenges. Now, at the beginning of the show, we talked about iPhones quite a bit because they're the flavour of the month at the moment. And the Commonwealth Bank, which is one of the big fours here in Australia, is about to launch a new application.
I'm excited about this.
Ka-ching.
Ka-ching.
Ka-ching. There's a few other apps, because I found a few other apps while I've been searching for them on the App Store, just on the odd chance it had snuck through. But it hasn't managed to get there just yet. So we're lucky enough tonight to actually have someone who knows everything that's potentially there is to know about the new Ka-ching system. And that's David Lindberg from the Commonwealth Bank. He is the Executive General Manager of Cards and Payments, according to his business card, which is several of. And he joins us this evening. Good evening, David.
Hey, how are you today, Andrew?
Yeah, very well. Thank you very much. So This is a bit exciting, isn't it? At last, we're actually going to be able to use our mobile phone, or in this case, the Apple iPhone, to actually make payments like we do when we go to the shopping centre and wave our little card across our point-of-sale machine. We can now do this with a phone with a bit of an add-on. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking, I think, for many years now about the dream of mobile payments and would it actually come true. And I guess we think we're just starting that journey right now, but the Ka-ching app will let you pay contactless using your phone. But it's not, you know, there's been a lot of trials, but they sort of put stickers or form factors on the phone. And what that allows you to do is put one credit card on your phone. This is actually totally integrated with your banking. And so you can literally pick whatever card you want from what would be in your wallet. It'll automatically appear on the application. You can scroll through your cards, choose a card, whether it be credit or debit, and then pay at the point of sale for, say, a coffee or whatever else you'd like to buy, all in real time. So, yeah, we're really excited. But again, I don't think we think this is where it's going to stop. This is just, from our perspective, the first step in what will be a journey that will really transform the way people pay.
Now, David, am I right in saying that this relies on near-field communication technology?
Yeah, so there's two things that are required technologically for this to work. The first is the near-field communication, and that's a, sort of the NFC chip, which transports the signal.
Now, is that the same chip that we've got in our cards at the moment, the smart cards that we get from the bank?
It is essentially the same chip, but then there's an antenna that takes that signal and does the NFC piece. But what's required is what's called a secure element, and that's actually much rarer. And it sits within the secure element, and so that's what makes it all the transaction quite quite a safe transaction. So both the combination of the NFC capability, sort of near-field communication, with a secure element, both of those sitting in the handset is what lets us make a contactless payment. So it's amazing because all the technology sits there already because of the credit card. And so now it's sort of just waiting, the ecosystem's ready, and then you introduce the phone with the same capability as the credit card, and it uses all of the same receiving devices from the merchant. So it's just it's something that we think will take off, you know, really very quickly.
Were all the Apple developers sitting up late at night, David, like we were, ahead of the Apple announcement, hoping that there was going to be an NFC chip in the new iPhone 4S?
Yeah, we were waiting up like everybody, and I think the dream will be when a firm like Apple, particularly Apple, puts both the secure element and the NFC chip in their phone. And then in a native way, you can just process all payments the way you would with what we're delivering. What we're delivering is actually putting the NFC chip and the secure element in a case. And so the case is like any other iPhone case, but it will just be a bit more special than the average one. But yeah, like I think a lot of the world, we were just hoping that Apple would launch that, and I suspect one day they will, but I'm not exactly sure when.
So we're not brand specific, I hope, David. This would work on an Android phone or any device, really, provided it had an NFC chip built into it. Is that right?
Well, I mean, our stated position is that whatever phones our customers are using, we're going to design an application that lets them pay. We had to start somewhere. So we started the launch that we did recently was for the iPhone specifically. But we're now we're actually developing an Android application as well. But what we didn't want to do is design sort of an iPhone application and just transport it so it works on the Android. We actually wanted to look at what natively is available on the Android and design an application that fit with that. And so that'll be out actually really, really soon, but we're not prepared to put a timeline on it. But we're talking months when that will be available.
All right, just looking at some of the information of the survey that you did recently, 28% of logons to the NetBank platform was from mobile devices. That's very impressive. That's quarter of the internet banking, or just a sniff over quarter, is from a mobile device. Did you expect that?
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, you design technology and it's advanced and people just start to use it. That's not what's happened here. What's happened here is that I think the banks were caught a little bit behind on this, and people just started to access us using their phone. And so we're now playing catch-up because 30% is such a big number, as you pointed out. So consumers are pulling us there. Now we think the next big step for financial services is to be what we call own mobile, so be the best bank there can be globally as it relates to everything that you can deliver on the mobile phone.
And speaking of that, Adam Turner's just asked a question. Is this a preemptive strike before Apple adds NFC and tries to control it the way that Apple traditionally controls things, you know, like newspapers and magazine subscriptions, et cetera? Is this just getting in before that, do you think, or is this just opportunistic, it's here now?
I think, you know, people were asking, you know, why have you gotten into this? And I think we're actually not trying to make money off of payments. And we're not trying to charge for the app. We're not trying to make any money by selling the cases. What we're trying to do is differentiate the customer experience for our own customers. And we just looked at the technology that we had. We have real-time banking, which no other bank in Australia of the majors has. And we felt that we can deliver this right away. So let's just do it and give our customers an experience nobody else can give them. As it relates to companies like Apple, you know, I really hope they keep innovating because they're a great company. I think Google will innovate because they're a great company. I suspect by the end of next year, we'll have 10 separate wallets launched for phones in Australia, and I actually see all that as quite complementary. You know, when you're the biggest bank in the country, what you really want to see is you want to see a market develop around this, and then we'll all benefit. And so, you know, I look forward to development, you know, from lots and lots of different places.
All right, so it's very much on the cards. A lot of manufacturers, a lot of banks that go down this line. Let's talk about the actual device and how it works itself. Now, obviously, we missed out on the chip for the 4S, but it might come in the 5. So we've got a case that we can get from the bank, I assume, after the application has launched. You can get this through NetBank, I take, and then pop it on your phone. Then what happens?
Yeah, well we've got a so basically, we've launched more than just the NFC. So we've launched, firstly, it's a banking application that we think is sort of a global best. We've also launched peer-to-peer payments. And so that is, in about 3 or 4 seconds, you can now send payment to a friend's mobile phone number, also to their email address, and also to their Facebook account. And so we've launched all of that in concert with the NFC. All of that works as soon as you download it. And then the final component being the NFC only works once you take the case and you put it onto your phone. And we what's called, we personalize your phone. So the combination of your user ID at the bank, your phone ID, and the case, all three have to be together, and then it'll also work for NFC.
All right. Just another quick question in relation to the, I guess, transferring money to a friend. Does it behave like NetBank does with the same limitations that NetBank have? I'm speaking with my customer cap on here at the moment, and that is that it can take a day or two to transfer money to a non-CBA account. Is that still the same?
Yeah, so we have real-time banking, so we send the advice in real time. Now, there are some of the receiving banks that might put a hold on that, and so that might come through the next day. But CBA to CBA, we have the ability to do it, and we're only bank that does this in real time. So one of the nice things about our customer size is 1 in 2 Australians have some sort of a banking relationship with the Commonwealth Bank. And so for those customers, the experience would be I could send you directly to your phone number, I could send you $35, it would show up instantly, and it would literally go into your account. For non-CBA customers, you'd collect it at a collection site, and then it would go into your account from there. And there could be a small lag, but that's has to do more with the institution you happen to be banking with.
All right. Now, with your regular card that you get at the moment, let's call it a credit card, you traditionally have the ability to access your credit card, a savings, and a check account. Is this the case with this application as well? You can choose one or even more accounts?
Yeah. So I mean, the way I described it is first and foremost, generally, everything that you can do on NetBank, you can now also do design for the mobile phone. So rather than us taking NetBank and making it smaller, we've actually redesigned NetBank for the mobile phone. So everything you can do there, you can do on this phone. As it relates to the payment itself, you can choose any account you want, so long as that account has contactless set up for it, which all of our debit cards do that we issue and all of our credit cards. And you can choose back and forth. That's really important because the same customer will use credit for some things, but quite often, for instance, they might go to Woolworths or Kohl's, and they'd much rather use their own money, so they use debit for that. And we wanted to give them the ability to switch back and forth. So the app caters for that.
All right. So if Dr. Ron here, or Ron wanted to send me $30 or something like that, it arrives on my phone as either an SMS or an email, I assume, as well. What happens then? Do I say, oh, thanks, Ron, and put it into my check or my savings account, or do I have one ingoing account on this software?
Well, if you were a CBA customer, you would actually have to do nothing. It would just show up in your account. And then there'll be if he sent it to your mobile phone number, then there'd be a text from the bank just saying, You just received $25, but the money's already in your account. So now if you're a non-customer, which I presume you're not, but if you're a non-customer, then you'd have to go in and put in your BSBN account number, and then it will go into your account.
All right, let's talk a little bit about security. Obviously, there's a lot of security about skimming these days, which is where people put things on teller machines and the likes like that. How secure will this be compared to traditional banking technology that we're using today?
Well, there's a real irony, I think, to a lot of contactless payments, in that a lot of customers will cite that as the reason why they don't feel comfortable, it feels insecure to them. skimming happens when I hand over my card to somebody. If that person's malicious and swipes it through a specially designed machine, they can steal credit card information. And then if they store that across enough customers, then they can go and try to take money. That's how most skimming fraud actually occurs. So by taking that away, you never give your card away. You literally just tap your phone. Skimming is impossible. So this technology, if it was taken up, would totally eliminate what is the greatest fraud, certainly in credit cards, which is skimming. So we sort of thought about this originally as something that would really help with fraud. And it's a bit ironic that a lot of customers are still a bit worried about it. There are some other things that we've launched, one of which is there's no data that will ever get stored on the phone. So it looks like the data is on the phone, but what we're really doing is giving you a view back to our systems. So anyone who steals your phone doesn't get anything. We can also wipe the whole phone remotely by calling our contact center or online. And then I guess the final thing I'd say is we're so confident with this technology and its security that we've put in place 100% fraud guarantee. So if anyone using this technology were to lose money to a fraudster, we'd make them whole as a bank. So David, we think this is probably a step forward as it relates to fraud.
David, we've heard about the user technology in this case. Let's just jump over to the merchant side of things.
Yeah.
Now, is it similar to the PayWave technology that we're starting to see roll out now? Do the merchants have to buy new hardware to be able to support this at the point of sale? How does that side of it work?
Yeah, but Ellen, that's such a good question, because what usually holds back really innovative technology is that the ecosystem itself isn't ready. I could talk. Japan is a great example of where the technology is more advanced than anywhere in the world, but the ecosystem didn't really support it. And we have a situation here where all the PayWave terminals, which are Visa's terminals, and also all the PayPass terminals, which are MasterCard terminals, they work without any redesign at all. And so all those terminals that sit out there in Australia, there are over 40,000 of them now.
Yep.
You can just tap your phone in the same way you tapped your credit card, and it would pay in the exact same way your credit card would pay. That's what's so nice about this, and I was talking a little bit about this earlier, that the ecosystem is ready, and we were just thinking it's waiting for the phone to be introduced, and that's why we're so excited to get it to market quickly.
Well, that's interesting, actually. Where do you see, David, that it's going to sit with similar products? Like, I guess
PayPal.
Yeah, like exactly PayPal. Adam's asking about, and also one of the other guys in our chat room there, Zathras, just says, is this going to work with Google Wallet? How does it sort of equate with those technologies?
Yeah, well, PayPal really is more of a at this point, an online-to-online merchant payment device. And certainly you could see this evolving to that. But at this point, this is really getting into the point-of-sale payment, and so it's really not conflicting with what they're doing. The Google Wallet is going to be, I think, really interesting. That hasn't been launched here. It's been launched commercially only. It started out in New York and San Francisco, and now is a broader rollout to across America, and I think they'll go globally shortly. But it's not here yet. But at this point, I think what we're launching is complementary to what they're launching, and we'll see how it all plays out. But again, as I said earlier, I think you're going to have at least 10 different plays of people trying to sell Australian consumers the concept of their wallet by the end of next year. And I think what we have is we have total integration with their banking. And so our view is if you are a CBA customer and we are giving you all this functionality to pay, then you'll probably be less attracted to the wallet. But again, if you are attracted to the wallet, then that means that they're adding some piece of value that we're not, and that's also good for our customers.
Well, that's right, something you can look at to see if it's something that your customers are going to want or otherwise as the technology becomes more accepted and widespread, I guess.
Yeah, I like to think of ourselves as partners to Google and partners to Apple much more than I like to think of ourselves as being threatened by either of those two.
Mm.
David, are there any limits? Obviously, without signatures, there's certain limits at the moment. But is there any limit to the maximum transaction you could do with this before you got out your credit card or a piece of plastic?
Yeah, well, that's also a good question. I mean, in terms of just the peer-to-peer, that is really a net bank transaction. It just doesn't look like it. And so ultimately, we'll get to the same limits as net bank. We're starting out with a $500 a day limit. So after $500, it would say, well, that's enough for the day. In terms of the contactless, so you're actually paying at point of sale, under $100, and and you can pay without the PIN. What we're moving to as an industry is you can also pay over 100, but if you pay over 100, the merchant will turn and ask you to put your PIN number into their PIN pad. And so you can use it for any amount in the future, but without the PIN, you can only use it for $100 or less, which limits certainly our customers, but ultimately our exposure.
So $100 per transaction without a PIN, and with all the transactions, up to $500 a day.
That's right, exactly.
Just another question too. If I was a person not traveling on Qantas at the moment, I was heading overseas, can I use that on international terminals like I would my normal card? Are they going to look funny at you and go, what are you doing with your phone?
Well, they might look funny at you, and you'll have to explain that in Australia we're far advanced to most other countries in the world.
We're technologically, much further ahead than you.
I'm one of the lucky ones because I have a prototype on my phone. So
you get all the looks.
So I was in San Francisco just 2 weeks ago, and I paid for my coffee using my phone, and it generated a crowd of traffic.
Oh, especially if you're in Palo Alto or down that part of the world, you're very close.
Yeah, well, I actually think when people see it done, they say that's cool, and then they say it's about time because we've been waiting for you guys to get your act together. Because the dream of it's not a genius thing to say that ultimately the phone will be what we use to pay with. So I think consumers were sort of just waiting for it and pleased that it's finally here.
I think it's going to be great. Adam's got about 10 questions. It just popped up on my screen here. He says, I'll throw them all at you and pick the ones you want to answer. Is there an extra transaction fee for using it?
And further to that, my question was going to be, David, it's all about the hip pocket. Is there a fee to actually buy the wallet or the holder, or is that just provided to the customer so they'll start using the service?
Well, I think in a business you have to decide what you're in it for, and ultimately we've taken a sort of a leap of faith that if we can differentiate on customer service, then we'll generate a higher volume of customers that want to choose us as a bank, and that's where the profit will sit for us. So we've been very clear, we have the ambition of making absolutely no money out of this at all. So the app will be free, the transaction will be we will not be changing the economics of the transaction in any way. There is the case, and what we've committed to is the case fluctuates a little bit based on currencies from where we're buying the case. Our commitment is that we will have a 0% margin on the case, but we will in most instances be passing on the cost of the case to our customers.
Yep.
So no margin, but we felt that the fair thing to do was to pass on just the pure cost to us. Back to our customers.
All right, but no extra transaction fees for actually using the device, using Kaching?
No, absolutely not. We're really not trying to make money in payments. Our business is banking.
All right, David, I think that's been a really good insight. We've been speaking to David Lindberg, who's the Executive General Manager of Cards and Payments with the Commonwealth Bank, about the new Kaching application, which hopefully it won't be too much longer through the App Store, but I guess no one knows the answer to that. It will take however long Apple say it will take to get through and online. And then we've just got the demand as people take it up and log on. Now, it's just jump into NetBank and register it or something like that once you decide to download the app. David?
Yeah, you can do it through NetBank. Actually, you literally just download the app and you don't have to go into NetBank. And you can set up your PIN, and then it'll ask you if you'd also like the case sent to your home. And because we already have your address as a customer, then we'll just send the case to your home. The only way this works is if you really get the user experience right. So we've paid a lot of attention to that.
Too easy. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's the user experience. Make it easy for the user and they'll use it.
Well, I'm really looking forward to hearing from people who use it.
It almost makes you want to go out and get a 4S. Yeah. Try it.
Give it a go. I want to wait for the Android application.
I think I'll wait for a 5.
We need that developed. We need the Android app, and then we'll give it a run.
Well, there's no reason why you couldn't do both.
Good
Absolutely.
Stuff.
David, thank you very much for your time this evening. It's been great. We've learned a lot.
Thanks for yours.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye.
Okay. Cheers. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Now toes with Dave. Blood and glass, 3 points of rave. Carpet lining, seats reclining. The words are smooth on talking. Shove it, brother, just keep walking. Transit, photos waiting, blood and glass, 3 points of rain, carpet lining, seats reclining, the words are smooth on talking, shut it, brother, just keep walking. Transit, photos waiting, blood and glass, 3 points of rain, carpet lining, seats reclining. Clever words are smooth on talking, shove it, brother, just keep walking. Clever words are smooth on talking, shove it, brother, just keep walking. Clever words are smooth on talking, shove it, brother, just keep walking.
I'm surprised they don't stand out the front healing lepers.
Trying to model these proteins takes a huge amount of computing power.
Looks like something Lady Gaga would wear.
I think a lot of people did give them shtick.
The boot up time is actually faster than the mobile phone 7 time.
Circuit switch networks, packet switch networks, two different things.
How do you kill it?
Put it in the washing machine.
Then Graham replied,
yes.
Doesn't like the way it looks in jeans.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
It's great chatting to David about the cards.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be good to see this technology in action.
Yes.
It's been a long time coming. It'll be great to get rid of the wallet. Can you imagine in maybe 10 years' time, hopefully sooner, you don't take a wallet with you when you go out. Just grab your mobile phone and that's it. You've got everything in there.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, we all carry a phone anyway these days, so the superfluous item has got to be the wallet.
You've got all these extra cards and things, if you can combine that.
What are you going to do for your receipt for the tax man, though? You have to get it put on your statement, and they're going to have to trust you on it.
Yeah, but that's okay. Your receipts, all the transactions are recorded electronically. You'll get statements and electronic receipts. That's fine. That's better than collecting pieces of paper and putting them in a shoebox.
Adam, what are your thoughts on what you heard before?
It's going to be a long time before they get rid of cash completely, because I know like some cafes, your minimum purchase, $15, right? So if you're going to buy a coffee, you've got to have cash on you. I would assume this might be the same. I wonder if there's a minimum purchase on it. If I can, you know, can I buy
it's designed for
just
the newspaper. Well, that's what they, you know, those ads you see on the TV.
Well, then maybe there's not. But are the places that I want to buy a coffee from going to support this stuff? I think it'll be a long time before I can walk around with no
Macca's
coins.
Do.
If you want to, but I might not want to buy my coffee at Macca's.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
I also think that this stuff will be a bit of a sleeper until Apple or vendors like Apple put the NFC chips into the phones and it gets a critical mass. And at that point, Apple's going to try and control it. They're going to come up with some special, amazing Apple way of doing it that locks everybody into Apple, and then Apple gets a taste of the gig. That's the way they do it. That's what they've done with newspapers and magazines and everything else. They want to be the gatekeeper. They want a slice of the action every time something happens.
GD's
and I reckon, actually, the CommBank, while I was originally thinking, oh, this is stupid, it'll never take off, they might actually be smart, because if they wait for Apple to do it first, Apple will do that and no one else will stand a chance. If they can get in now and get some, you know, customer loyalty and people using it, then when Apple comes along and does it, people won't necessarily feel, oh, I've got to jump into the Apple one. because I'm already using something
that works. That's a valid choice, isn't it? Because the bank of Apple is not far off because they've
Apple
got everyone's...
Apple doesn't believe in valid choices.
Yeah, they've got your details and you can put your $30 gift card in there and use your NFC to FPOS out of your Apple account in whatever currency you choose, I guess.
That's what Apple will want. They want it all just high into the Apple ecosystem.
Yeah.
They've got your email address. They've got your iTunes account. That's all they need.
The short curlies.
Absolutely.
The global bank of Apple. GD makes a good point on the chat at the moment. When the battery goes flat, you're stuffed.
Yeah, try and catch a cab.
That's it. You get a cab or anything like that, and your iPhone's gone.
My iPhone battery's gone flat. I can't pay for this now.
You can't swap it out like you can in a Droid, can you?
Maybe cabbies left that little iPhone charge points.
I've had that in a taxi. I got into a taxi once, and this guy had like a double adapter in the cigarette lighter and said to me, do you want to charge your iPhone? And it's like, dude, I don't know what I'll catch. I don't think so.
Yeah, what's coming out of your cigarette lighter plug? Yeah, exactly.
Hey, speaking of cash, you need loose change if you want to catch a public transport in Melbourne here.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't accept legal tender on trams.
No, they don't do that.
You want to buy a $4.90 ticket with a $5 note, they won't accept it.
Yeah, and you've only got to stop to pay or you get rugby tackled off the tram if you're not careful, or the train for that matter. Hey, we have this guy comes in regularly, does a view from the couch. You want to hear it this week?
Oh, that's Adam Turner.
It is.
Is he back? I thought he got replaced by Siri.
Yeah, that woman, I won't say those words on the radio. The real Adam. Let's see if he's back, shall we? Here he is.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
QuickFlix all-you-can-eat movie service is the final frontier in Australian digital entertainment, and I'm wondering if it'll open the floodgates on Australian subscription services. I've long felt that all-you-can-eat subscription services are the way of the future, ever since I got my first taste of Rhapsody's all-you-can-eat music via the amazing Sonos music player. I say such subscription deals are one of the industry's best weapons against piracy. Make it easier to pay for content rather than steal it, and most people will do the right thing. All-you-can-eat subscription services have been pretty thin on the ground in Australia, I'd say primarily due to the difficulty in negotiating the deals with the content providers who don't see Australia as a priority. Now QuickFlix is paving the way, bringing a $15 per month unlimited streaming movie service to Mac, Windows, the PlayStation 3 and Sony's Bravia Internet Video platform, which is built into its TVs and Blu-ray players. Sony already had the best internet video offering of Australian Blu-ray players, and the QuickFlix deal is the icing on the cake. Now buying up Telstra's old DVD rental customers looks like a pretty smart long-term deal, because QuickFlix can migrate those customers from getting DVDs delivered to downloading movies as it suits the customer rather than as it suits the content provider. There's talk of QuickFlix coming to the Xbox next year, and founder Stephen Langsford has previously told me he's got his eye on the iPad as well. This is great news because hopefully we'll see QuickFlix come to a wide range of devices. It would complete the otherwise brilliant WDTV Live and the Boxy Box, not to mention the great Ice TV capable PVRs from the likes of Humax, Strong, Topfield and BeyondWiz. It could even come to the Apple TV, considering that the Apple TV offers Netflix access in the US. Meanwhile, Fetch TV has struck an interesting deal with Optus that will see it offering streaming video in a lot more Australian lounge rooms. All of these new services will get a major shot in the arm when the NBN breaks Telstra's stranglehold whilst delivering faster internet access and multicasting to most Australian homes. QuickFlix move into online movie rentals, particularly all-you-can-eat, is a significant milestone in Australia's steps towards embracing online content delivery. It's also another nail in the coffin for the arrogant free-to-air broadcasters who still seem to think they can dictate our viewing habits.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Bring it on. Bring it on.
Arrogant free-to-air broadcasters. That's a bit harsh, Adam. Come on.
Oh, I don't think that's harsh at all. I think that's being kind.
That was restrained, was it?
I think that's using the words you're allowed to use on radio. Yeah. I noticed Siri got a bit censored last week.
Oh, it was a bit long.
Yeah, I know. Siri had some great mispronunciations. I won't say them on the radio because I'm not sure what I can get away with.
There were some funny chicken noises as well that got edited over some Siri's interpretations as well last week.
Yeah. But no, valid point that the NBN, when it rolls out, must be a real threat to broadcasters. Because really, who needs a TV aerial these days, as Graham would say if he was here in the studio? Pull everything in. Sorry?
I was going to say, the problem that Fetch TV has at the moment is that their services rely on multicast features built into the DSLAM in order to stream pay TV to you. So if you're with Internode, IINet, some of the others, and you're connected to one of that company's DSLAMs at your exchange, then you can sign up for Fetch TV and you can get the free-to-air TV, the movie rentals, and the streaming pay TV channels. But if you're not with one of those ISPs, or even if you are, but you're actually connected to, say, a Telstra or an Optus DSLAM on a wholesale agreement, so you might be an Internode customer but connected to Telstra hardware,
yep.
You cannot get the full Fetch TV service. You cannot get the streaming pay TV channels. You can only get the free-to-air and the movie rentals.
I wonder if the ACCC would have something to say about that. That's...
Well, the thing is that Telstra and Optus don't want to switch on the multicast features in their DSLAMs. Now, Telstra doesn't use the multicast features for its streaming for its Xbox, for its T-Box service. It uses a different kind of streaming. Now, Optus are doing the same thing because you can now get Fetch TV from Optus, but they call it Me TV.
This was the $9.50 add-on, I think I saw a press release come out the other day. Me TV, is that what it's called, is it?
Yeah. So you can get it for if you're an Optus broadband customer or if you're an Optus mobile phone customer. Now, if you're a mobile phone customer, obviously you may not have Optus for your home broadband, but you can still get the streaming channels even if your DSLAM doesn't support multicasting because they're not using multicast to deliver those streams. But when the NBN comes along and goes through almost every home, it will have multicasting built in. So then Fetch TV will be able to offer the full service to pretty much anybody, and all ISPs will be able to offer whatever they want to whoever they want. Like, you know, Internode can't offer Fetch TV to all of its customers because it doesn't have DSLAMs in all the exchanges. So when the NBN comes on, it will be a level playing field. Everyone will have good access to things like multicasting, and any ISP will be able to offer anything to anyone while not being held to ransom by one of the other ISPs because they don't feel like switching on a feature in their exchange because they don't use it, so they don't want to give the competition an advantage.
So why is it that so many people just download content illegally?
Because it's easier than stuffing around with everything I just said.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's easier to install the uTorrent client than it is to understand everything I just said for the last 2 minutes.
Yeah, no, that's very true, isn't it? And as we were discussing with the phone options before with the Commonwealth Bank, if you make it easy for the consumer, they'll do it.
People will use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And does this mean also that we're going to be platform agnostic to a degree, like your Sony boxes, your Nintendo boxes, your Xboxes, any box you've got is going to be able to see it?
QuickFlix might be a really good example of that because in the US, for example, Netflix is built into lots of things. Netflix is available through the Apple TV.
Well, you said your PlayStation when you boot it up, a big red square you get.
I think there's a Netflix compatibility in Western Digital WDTV Live.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of those boxes, you get them here. All the Blu-ray players over there have Netflix and some of them have like Amazon and stuff like that. But here, none of that works because there are no providers for it. QuickFlix looks like it could now be the Australian version of Netflix. It's in the PS3. It's in the Bravia internet video, so all of the new in Sony TVs and Sony Blu-ray players. It's available via your computer. They've told me they've got their eye on their iPad. There's a story at the moment that they're looking at the Xbox 360 next year as well. So this could be the one. And then you have, I would assume, that you then have one account and you can jump between devices and, you know, do things like pick up where you left off or watch one thing in one room or one thing in another room. And it's none of this making you jump through hoops rubbish. You just sign up for a thing and then you sit down at any gadget you want and do what you want.
Well, that shouldn't be hard to do.
It shouldn't be, but we've never got there yet. It's always, you can do this on the Apple TV, you can do this on the Bravia, you can do this on the TV, you can do this on the T-Box. None of them are perfect. All of them are like a piece of the puzzle.
Speaking of Apple TV, when?
Smooth, man, you're so smooth.
Siri, let's do I'd like to watch Channel 9, please.
Siri would not like the language I use when I watch television. Get this blank off. You can do that. You can be Kennedy and fill in the blanks there, but, you know.
Siri would have to be pretty thick-skinned, I think, to live inside your iPhone, Adam.
Yeah. I just want to be able to yell, mute this rubbish at the television and have it stop.
It would probably do that for you.
It's not Siri, though. It's more basic than that. Why the hell would I want Apple to be in charge of my television? Oh, Apple's why in not? Charge of your iPhone, so you can do what Apple will let you do. Apple's in charge of your iPad and your MacBook, so you can do what Apple will let you do. Apple has an Apple TV, which lets you do what Apple will let you do. And when I say an Apple TV, I mean a little set-top box. So if you're happy to live in the Apple world, get an Apple set-top box and plug it into your real television. But why the hell would you want to buy a television that Apple can control and cripple with firmware updates and tell you, no, you can't do this and you can't do that and you can't connect this and you can't connect that? I bet you, for a start, one of the things will only have HDMI inputs, because the new Apple TVs only have HDMI outputs.
You can just imagine, can't you?
And the problem with that is, I guess there's not that many old television sets.
The problem with that is, what if you've got other devices that don't have those kinds of
things? Well, how many devices do you have? I don't have any, but that's me. Dr. Ron, have you got any old tellies?
Any old tellies?
What, do you want to record on your VCR or something?
What if you've got boxes that you want to connect it up? Yeah. What if you want to connect up an Apple TV to an old TV in the spare room? Or you want to take it on holidays?
They're mutually exclusive, Adam. Move on.
But they don't have to be. It's only because Apple feel like
they're on the nature strip.
Yeah, exactly.
And Adam, so why do you want to let Apple be a jerk with your television as well?
You can just imagine
they
it, can't
come
you?
Up with some stupid feature that makes it sound so great that you can't live without it, but you are selling your soul to Apple by doing that. It's trading liberty for convenience. They'll come up with some stupid convenience like Siri, and for that you trade the liberty of actually having control of your own television.
You go to watch a free-to-air channel and you get a message saying, I'm sorry, we don't have an agreement with 9MSN in your country. You can't watch Channel 9.
Let us put these ads over the top of it.
Exactly. Yeah,
because there's already patents for all this kind of stuff. Dropping fresh adverts into old shows.
Oh, can you imagine that? Having banner ads or something that gets superimposed.
There's a can of Coke in the background, all that kind of stuff. Once Apple can control your television, they can do all this rubbish.
Scary, isn't it?
Not interested. It's bad enough that they're in charge of your phone. Not interested.
It won't be called a television. It'll be called a telescreen. Oh, hang on a minute. I think,
An ice screen.
An ice screen. I was thinking telescreens as in the George Orwell 1984 world.
Yeah. Apple have become the big brother on the screen. I don't know if they realise it, but they are the bad guys now. They are the ones that everyone are going, oh, they're the ones that are in control. We need to break that, you know.
Well, I must admit, I like my Boxy. Ever since you did the View from the Couch selling the virtues of the Boxy, little thing that sits on you, despite the fact that you said the WAF factor was pretty low and it didn't sit nicely in the living room ecosystem.
It's ugly, but it's good.
Oh, it works incredibly well.
It's like a Volvo. It's Boxy, but it's good.
Correct. And if as soon as you hook up unblockers to it, it opens up a world of viewing.
All it needs is a movie rental service, and I know
that hasn't it?
No, it hasn't. But I know the people at D-Link who look after the Boxy box, and I know that's the kind of thing that's on the roadmap. Quick Flix might be the thing. Imagine if you added Quick Flix to the Boxy box.
Well, why wouldn't they?
The WD TV. Well, they've got to strike the deals, right? It's not just hey, let's do it. You've got to get everybody on board. But if you added Quick Flix to the Boxy box, or to the WDTV Live or something like that, they would be awesome. That's the only thing. That's the only thing I reckon that stops the Boxy box being the absolute dream device. You know, short of the fact that it won't let you watch live TV, but who really cares about live TV? The fact that you can't hire movies through it using something like QuickFlix. I bet you within 12 months' time, QuickFlix will be on the Boxy box.
Absolutely, and as soon as you
don't know that for a fact. It's not like I've got inside information, but I will be. You know, I bet you they're talking about it right now. I know QuickFlix are keen to expand. I've spoken to them about this stuff before. They are keen to get out there and be big and be on as much as they can. They will be keen to be on things like the Boxy Box and the WDTV Live, and those companies will be keen because they'll be annoyed about the fact that they use Netflix in the US and they come here and it's like, nah, sorry, nothing.
You used an acronym before, Andrew, and some of our, which was WAF, and some of our new listeners like on Phoenix FM in Bendigo and YFM in Launceston, they might be familiar with that acronym.
No.
What is a WAF?
Well, I think it was introduced to us by Adam. It's the Wife Acceptability Factor. Yes. Which is not a unique term. It's been out there for a while. Have a look on, what's that thing called? Wikipedia. It's all there. You can have a look and it'll tell you what that acronym means.
So it has high WAF, Adam.
Yes. I get a bit frustrated because some of the editors I deal with
don't take it out
or change it. One of them changed it to PAF, the Partner Acceptance Factor. And I'm like,
it makes me
look like an idiot. I know it's a little bit of a sexist term, but it refers to a very real phenomenon.
It's not correct.
It's ugly, and if it's difficult to use and the lady of the house doesn't like it, then they ain't going to be happy with it. And if it's a serious expense and it's not the kind of expense you can make without consulting with your partner, then you might find that a low WAF means, you know, life is not good.
And you can always tell what level of WAF you have by the type of mobile handset they tend to like to use. Well, I've certainly made that.
No, you're confusing WAF with usage levels.
Oh, am I?
I tell you, this is how you measure the WAF of a device, right?
Yeah.
You go out for the day and you come home and your better half is using the device of their own free will to do something because they decided it was the right tool for the job and they knew that they could set it up and it would work without 20 minutes of mucking around and switching things on and off. If they got to do all that, they won't touch it.
Yeah, no, you're right, actually. We can't move on that much further because we're actually nearly out of time tonight, would you believe?
Mad Minute. Time for the Mad Minute.
Here are the things I would have liked to have talked about, but I'm sure we'll jump in if we do. RIM faces a compensation lawsuit over the BlackBerry outage. Remember that happened
a few weeks ago?
When all the email servers and stuff went down. Well, what have RIM and Nokia got in common? I think they're both heading south.
Is this a joke?
No, I'm just...
I think the answer would be quite rude.
A Nokia, a BlackBerry and an iPhone walk into a bar.
No. RIM's looking like, I wouldn't want to be either of those two companies at the moment. I just think you'd be treading water, wouldn't you? One of those things.
You know what Nokia needs to do? Come out with their own custom tablet that uses an operating system that no one else uses. That's a winner.
Absolutely.
So there you go. Another Tech Talk Radio summer series done and dusted. I hope you've enjoyed the reminiscing from tonight's show. We'll be back with another edition of the summer series next week on Tech Talk Radio. And don't forget, in the meantime, you can contact us through the usual channels via the website. Now you can send us an email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, and keep in touch with us during the course of the summer break. So thanks for joining us today, wherever you might happen to be around Australia or around the world. And we'll look forward to your company next time. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.